Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense.
It came out in 1999. It's a classic at this point.
Yeah, that's a little unfortunate. But yeah, okay, well, 25 years this year.
Yeah,
it's a quarter of a century old.
It's M. Night Shyamalan's, like, his big debut movie where you know, people see his movies and now and they're like, oh, he's a kind of a household name. But back then he was not. And
yeah, it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, it was groundbreaking. But
no, we can't rush into that because first we have to know what's new with you, Meredith.
What's new with me? Well, getting ready for the end of school. Yeah. Even though it doesn't feel like it is, but it is, kind of.
It's a little far off, but I'm doing the same thing where I'm, like, doing things kind of earlier than I need to just because I'm excited for the end.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of preparing for next year. And next year will be the first time I'm doing the same grade in the same room.
Yeah.
Finally.
I mean, that's kind of the...
how many years? I'm so tired.
That's the case for me, too, I think. I mean, kind of, yeah, because I switched mid-year last year, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice, though. Mm-hmm. It's, like, a lot less stressful and all that, but... what else is going on? Oh, I have some family dirt.
I would love to hear some family dirt.
Okay, so... And I forgot to tell you last week when you were here, because it was pretty juicy.
Oh.
But...
Has it gotten juicier since last week?
No. Oh, I kind of put it to bed.
Okay.
But, so... We had our lovely wedding, which is beautiful and amazing. And I mean, I was there. I thought it was pretty great. But
you're a little biased.
It was recorded on, or no, not recorded, streamed on Zoom.
Okay.
On Victor's phone. And one of his groom's lady's wife or husband, press record and then went and sat in the audience. Or not record, but, you know, stream.
Right.
Sat in the audience. And then people joined the Zoom, and they're given instructions to mute themselves as they watched the ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And a good chunk of family, friends, coworkers, people who play WoW with me were listening. And my stepdad's sister, my aunt, was talking shit the whole time.
Oh, my God.
And everyone could hear her.
And she didn't know?
Well, people in the chat were like, can you please mute yourself?
Yeah, and she didn't.
No.
What kind, like, talking shit about what?
My vows. What people looked like.
Oh, my God.
Just being super disrespectful and awful.
Yeah.
So it was not recorded, so I couldn't listen myself. But people were messaging us, all people who didn't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to kind of, they're the same...
Reports.
Yeah. Someone was saying awful stuff and being terrible. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, you're related to this person? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. And so I sent her a message like, by the way, everyone knows or heard you. We all know who you are now. And I know how you think of me. And don't bother telling me that you didn't mean to. Because you kind of... It's like stuff you say behind closed doors is what you really think.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, no.
Now I know. And yeah. I guess thanks for that.
Right. It was such a bummer. And I was like, you suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to get too heavy, but this was like... That was crazy. I was like, I cannot believe that.
Yeah, like you have to be a pretty shitty person deep down to like want to... shit on an event like that.
Or just
family,
like,
member or not.
Someone who's unhappy in their life and want to put other people down and maybe think that it makes them look better or feel better, or I don't really know the purpose.
It's like, if that's how you feel, why would you even be watching this event?
It was strange.
Yeah, like, why would that's you tune in if just to say shitty stuff about things? It's like, ugh.
I know. You know, keep it in your head.
Yeah.
And don't say it when people are maybe listening to you. If you're not tech savvy, maybe keep it on the inside.
Yeah.
And make sure all your technology is put away and turned off. And then you're like, you know what I really thought about that wedding? And then say it.
Well, that's like, you know, putting in the chat, like, hey, please mute yourself. But I'm kind of surprised that, like, if this is your stepdad's sister, I'm assuming he was watching too. Like, why wouldn't he, like, shoot her a text and be like, hey, everyone can hear you?
Well, some people called her.
Okay.
I think, and no one answered. And then a lot of my family, they're trying to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they couldn't get the volume on because they didn't know how to work the Zoom.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it's just as well.
Yeah.
And not having like a mystery. Someone was like, this is like mystery science theater, whatever.
Yeah.
Where people are like just talking trash the whole time. And you're like listening like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. So I was like, that's juicy. I got to share that. That's nuts.
I can imagine like being just so humiliated if I'd done something like that. Cause like, you know, I'm not above talking shit. Like I'd like to think that I wouldn't do it like on an occasion, like someone's wedding or whatever. But yeah. I mean, I talk shit sometimes.
Sure, sure.
And there have been a couple of times like on a minor level where I've gotten busted, you know, somehow like sent a text to a wrong person or something like that. And it's so humiliating.
Yeah.
Because it really does shine a spotlight on like, ew, I'm being kind of a dick right now.
And you're like, you know what? I have to take ownership. Yes, I am a dick.
Yes. And I was taking this opportunity to be a dick on this occasion.
And I apologize.
Yes.
Yeah. I apologize for my actions.
Yeah, but that's like, that's a grand scale. Like,
oh, that's a grand slam being a piece dick of shit. Yeah. So anyway, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to blow this up. I'm going to tell everybody
that
happened. And, you know, I was like telling my family, I was like, guess what? So-and-so thinks of me. And I'm, because I think maybe, I don't know if it comes with age or whatever, or maybe I'm less mature or maybe more mature. I'm not really sure if I handle this in the correct way, but it's something where I was like, you know what? Maybe in my 20s or even my 30s, I would have kept it on the inside and be like, don't say anything. Don't try to, you know, cause drama.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's going to be that mean spirited, I'm just going to be like, you know what? We heard you and everyone else did.
So yeah.
This is very uncool of you. And just kind of be direct about it and say that's not okay. And I don't know. But
yeah,
I think that I just honestly, I felt pretty upset about it. And then I was like, you can't do that to me. And then whatever.
I'm just not going to sit here and take it and act like anything. It's not okay.
Right. And I felt like so much better about it. And I'm to the point where I'm just kind of like laughing about it because I'm like, I don't think this would be the process if I'd kept it on the inside and not said anything.
That's true. Yeah. Like, and now you'll be able to just like, I mean, not forget about it, but if you hadn't expressed, you know, or reached out to her, or communicated with her, then you definitely would have like dwelt on it longer.
For sure.
And to a greater extent. So,
yeah.
And
this
is the right call.
Live and let live. You know, everyone who was there and my husband and I and everyone, all of our friends and family that were there, it was, we all had a really nice time. It was really fun. And, you know, if you want to be rude about it, then I don't know if something's going on with you. So.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna tell some crazy dirt. Share that. I never have anything really juicy to say because I'm talking about television or stuff I watched.
Yeah, television or school. Yeah.
Like, guess what?
Oh, my God.
So, moving on. Anything juicy with you? No, not really.
not on that level. Scale? No way. I mean, we have a couple of cool things happening. Cool things with my family. Not juicy things, but like one last night. So Tom and Grace are in Philadelphia this weekend for volleyball. And so it's just me and the boy who is, you know, currently 17 and a junior. And he is the one of my children that is just like me in many, many, many ways. And so on the rare occasion that we spend time one on one together, it's like we just have the best time because we're both like big talkers and big, you know, big verbal communicators, whereas the other half of our family are, you know, the less said, the better type personalities.
Just hold your cards to your chest and keep everyone guessing all the time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Come on.
But it's like when we went out to the Underdogs, the place where we took you guys for brunch last time.
Yeah.
The taco shop. We went there for dinner last night. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we barely get through our food because we're just like yakking like the whole time. And just, you know, talking about family and college and friends and like his experiences at, you know, his old school and in high school, and like, you know, talking a little bit about his the girlfriend that he had for the first couple years of high school, and what, you know, now looking back, like what he sees that how that affected his social, like socialization and everything. And so it's just like absolutely incredible. And he's been doing this thing lately where he goes into Golden Gate Park, and he's got a spot that he goes to, and he's like trying to write poetry because he's always been a really strong like analytical writer, like academic writer, but he's never really been super into creative writing. But so like he's kind of trying to do that right now. And he was like, yeah, I could like when we get home, I could read you some of my poems. And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And I was like, I saw some poems I wrote in high school. I could read you those. So I literally got out my little book of poems from when I was a teenager. And we sat down like trading poems back and forth, like one of yours, one of mine.
That's fun.
And then we watched It Chapter Two because he hadn't seen that those movies before, and he's never seen the original either. But we had just watched Chapter One on, I guess, Wednesday night, I guess it was, maybe, or whatever, the first night that Tom and Grace were gone. And so we watched Chapter Two last night. It was just like it was a very, very fun and special night, especially like in the context of, you know, how many more nights do we have of those before he's, you know, fly away.
He's like, see ya. And you're like, but I have more poems for you to read.
I didn't get through them all. So we only made it into stuff more years.
you only read my goth phase.
Right?
You didn't read my hipster thing.
But it's funny because it was very much like Emily Dickinson versus Walt Whitman, because his were like all about like it was very observational, very nature based, obviously, because he's writing them in the park, and then some observational of like people. Whereas mine was all about boyfriends and like my family, and it was like all very like interpersonal, social type thing. So like the thematic elements of our poems were opposite,
drastically different.
Yeah, but that was amazing. And then also an exciting thing that happened for us this week is my mother-in-law is now officially a cyborg.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, so she has an essential tremor, and she'd had a procedure like 3 weeks ago, I guess, to implant a microchip into her brain. And then they had to wait for everything to heal from that procedure. And then this week was her appointment where they programmed the microchip and actually like turned it on. And it fucking worked. Like,
oh, that's cool.
She can pick up a cup and take a drink, and her hand doesn't shake, and it's like, it's incredible.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Man, science is nuts.
I know. And I was like, and now it's Skynet. Like,
oh, that's great. And I
just on an unrelated note.
No, you're reminding me, because remember Noelle? I wanted to share that. She had her lumpectomy, whatever, removal. She didn't, you know, she, was for those listening, she's my good friend's sister, and she came in to hang out with us at my bachelorette party in February. And anyway, she got her lumpectomy. She's been going through chemo, all this other stuff, and she is cancer free. So she shared that yesterday on social media. I'm sure she's fine with me talking about it, but she's like, it's the best case scenario. So she'll do radiation and whatever stuff they have to do for the rest of the year, but it's really good news, so I'm really happy.
That's fantastic. She is a great, great lady.
She's amazing.
She's a lot of fun.
She's a funeral director. She's somebody who has, like, major empathy and loves to help people through, like, the most horrible, challenging times of their lives. And she's just, like, is so, so generous. So is her sister. You know, they're just great people. So I'm really happy that that happened.
But good things happening to good people.
My share can't only be a bummer.
Hey, so. I didn't think your family juicy bits were, well, that sounded weird, a bummer.
Juicy gossip.
It was good. Sometimes that juicy gossip is very satisfying.
It's kind of fun. But so I was happy about that. Yay, so I was Noelle, that's exciting. But I'm glad about your mother-in-law's robot brain. That's awesome.
Yeah. I haven't seen her since the procedure, so I'm excited to, you know, like see her in person and hear how she's feeling and everything. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. Great news.
I didn't even know that it was a thing. And that's very cool to hear that, science. 'Cause you kind of usually hear about the stuff that's not working and stuff that's a bummer. And you're like, oh, you know, I want to hear about the wins, you know, sometimes, not just the Alzheimer's is no
cure for that.
You know, like,
irreversible brain damage.
No, I don't want to hear that. That's sad. But, okay. So I did the summary this time. Mm-hmm. I also have to share that I watched it with Charlotte.
What did she think?
She never... Well, I'll read the summary, but it was amazing. You know, it's so fun watching something vicariously through somebody.
Yeah.
That's such a big part of horror movies, mm-hmm. and even suspense and a revelation and experiencing it kind of.
For the first time again. Because they have no context for it.
No idea. So that was really amazing. So I think she liked it.
Nice. And, yeah, we showed it to the kids a few years back. I don't really remember how they felt one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know. Grace was probably underwhelmed because she wouldn't have thought it was very scary.
Yeah.
And Tommy, I mean, he's just now actually starting to get into watching like scary stuff. Like he watched Sinister. I didn't even know. And then he just mentioned, he's like, oh, I watched this movie. And he always tells me which ones he's seen. And then he said, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is that's the kid the that best. Like wouldn't watch Gremlins because it was too scary. Like this is, you know, he was so guarded for horror for so long.
So he leveled up.
Yeah. Oh, big time.
Big time. All right. So I'm going to read... Sorry, it's a summary. Hold on. Let me see here. Okay, so a woman... It starts out with a scene. A woman walking down into a basement. And she looks dressed up. And she's wearing a lovely dress. She's retrieving a bottle of some wine. And she notices it's quite cold. But then she returns upstairs and comments that it's really cold inside the house. Mm-hmm. So her husband, who's Bruce Willis, he plays the character Malcolm. And her, they put on sweaters and they're sitting in front of the fireplace. They're celebrating his award for child psychology and they're sipping wine, enjoying each other's company. He quips that they should hang the award in the bathroom. And she tells him that, you know, no, you have a gift. You really help people, you know, children. Mm-hmm. The two of them are kissing. They go to the bedroom, but they're interrupted by the realization that there is a broken window and the phone is off the hook. And they kind of... you know, surmise that someone has broken into their home. That someone is in the bathroom, who's unclothed, he's wearing his underwear, and he's just holding himself, kind of shuddering, looking very unwell, and like someone who's really troubled.
Right. And it's worth noting who that individual is. The actor.
Who is it, guy? It's
Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah. He looked so weird to me. Like,
yeah, he was emaciated. Yeah. Like, you've never seen him that thin. And so when he popped up in that movie, so many people didn't recognize him. Mm-hmm. And so then when people were like, that's Donnie Wahlberg, everyone was just, like, freaking out. Because that was, like, I don't think he'd done any acting before then. So he was literally just one of the new kids.
Yes, and he did an amazing job. So I forgot that part. When I see him on the casting, I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I forgot immediately when I saw him. He's kind of, he was a bit of a chameleon in that. So then Malcolm tells the adult man that there are no drugs in this house. And, you know, you've broken into a home. But he's being very compassionate, but also
he just
guarded.
Thinks this guy's strung out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The man, he also realizes, is a former patient as he starts talking, like, you don't know me? Do you not remember me? And he said, I was afraid. He wanted help. Malcolm was not able to help him. Malcolm tries to talk him down. He's like, I failed you. I'm really, you know, what can we do? Let's talk. And then he shoots him.
Wait, and, who shoots who?
He shoots Malcolm. But I can't remember the patient's name. I want to say I can't remember.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down. But Malcolm is shot. He falls onto the bed and his wife, her name is Anna, she rushes over to help him. And then the screen fades to black.
I thought it didn't it indicate that then the patient also shot himself?
It was later. It was later that it was, you don't really see that at all. And then it was later where you get the more of the scene played out and you kind of realize that happened too. So now we're in South Philadelphia and Malcolm is sitting on a bench waiting for his new patient, Cole, who's 9 years old with divorced parents. He has a bunch of notes. Malcolm follows Cole as Cole runs to the church and goes inside. And I should also mention Cole is played by amazing child actor Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
Osment?
Osment. Yeah, it's the Osment. It's not Osment. Yeah. Not like Donnie and Marie.
No. And he's great. So, and he's just a kind of a tiny little boy.
Oh, yeah. He's so small. That's a really big asset for being a child actor is being small for your age, because then you can play younger, but you have the direct ability and the intelligence to like follow cues and memorize lines and everything, but they can be like, oh, he's playing a 4-year-old, but he's actually 7 or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was in the Zac Efron Ted Bundy movie.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the guy that worked with Bundy's girlfriend. Oh, and was like trying to kind of date her. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was also in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was in a few episodes. It was really funny, actually.
Yeah.
He played, he was going to be a familiar, but he was like really lazy and made Guillermo do all the work. And then he, anyway, it was great. So, and everyone watching, it was kind of, yeah, he's obviously Haley Joel Osment. So it's kind of fun. So, Malcolm follows as Cole runs into the church. He runs inside. He approaches Cole and chats with him as Cole is playing in the pews with his many, many soldier figures. Cole asks Malcolm, are you a good doctor? And he said, I used to be. I even won an award once. Mm-hmm. And then Cole says, am I going to see you again? And Malcolm, you know, replies, you know, if it's okay with you, I'd like to see you again. And then that's the end. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a little bit disconnected scenes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the intent. But
right, yeah. It makes sense later.
It makes sense later. So Malcolm returns home to a sleeping wife with tissues all around her. So then he just retreats to the basement to work on his new case. Now we see Len, Cole's mother. She's played by Toni Collette, she's
amazing. Love and adore.
Yes, we love and adore her. She's getting ready. She's closing all of the cabinet doors and drawers in the kitchen because they're all sitting there open. Mm. She goes down to the dryer to go do, you know, get the laundry going. And then she returns to the kitchen and all the cabinets and the drawers are open again.
A la Poltergeist style. Quickly,
yes. And Cole's sitting there looking nervous with a bowl of cereal in front of him with his hands on the table. She's like, well, what happened? He's like, it was me. And he kind of quickly says, I was looking for something, Pop-Tart, whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, okay. And he's like, do you think something bad about me? And she's like, no. So he seems really worried about what his mother, how she's feeling and all that. Then he leaves. He runs out and his hands have left sweat / like heat marks right on the table, indicating to the audience he didn't move. He was just there.
He was like scared shitless.
Yeah, very, very afraid. But then, you know, he runs off to school with an arm in arm with a jerk who calls him a freak. So they run off together. So then later, Cole returns home and Malcolm's there sitting across from his mother. She jokes that she won the lottery and swam in the fountain. They're kind of playing a best case scenario of the day situation. And it's Cole's turn, and he said, I was picked first for kickball team. And everyone put me on, I was put on their shoulders, and everyone cheered for me.
Yeah.
And it was just like
heartbreaking. You're like, oh my gosh. You're like, this kid is, you know, imagining this perfect day that like he's never had.
Or he's not treated like garbage, basically. So then Lynn walks off. She said, we're having, you know, pancake later for dinner. You have an hour. Malcolm says, I'll play a game with you, Cole. And if I say the right thing, you walk towards me. Mm-hmm. If I say the wrong thing, that's something that's not right, you can take a step back. So he says many right things. And Cole tells him several things as he's approaching. You know, that he drew some stuff and made his mom upset after Malcolm says, you've never really been in trouble. And he takes a step back. And he's like, I actually drew some stuff. And the principal called. My mom cried a lot. And I don't draw like that anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he eventually gets so far behind. You know, he leaves the scene a little bit and says, you know, you can't help me.
Yeah.
Basically, after Malcolm kind of makes a bunch of incorrect assumptions. Mm-hmm. So then Malcolm later arrives at a restaurant to meet Anna, and he's late. He comments on his lateness. He's like, I'm just having a hard time keeping track of time.
Yeah.
She ignores him, and as Malcolm tells Anna, you know, Cole is a similar case to another case, you know, the guy who couldn't help.
Right.
And she gets the bill. She pays. She goes, happy anniversary, and leaves the table. Mm-hmm. So us as an audience, we think she's just kind of like over him.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like they're experiencing marital problems, because the first time we saw her, she's like cried herself to sleep. And now like he's late for their anniversary dinner and she like doesn't even want to look at him or talk to him. And so we're like, they're definitely, their marriage is in crisis.
Definitely in a shambles, I guess. So the next day, Cole and Malcolm are walking to school. Cole comments that a kid who walks with him usually, but, and, you know, he hates me. He just says it matter of fact. You know, Malcolm tells Cole, he's like, you know, well, he's a jerk. You know, don't talk to him anymore. Or I don't know, like, he sounds like a jerk. And so it's kind of a quick scene, but it's obvious that Cole really doesn't have any friends.
Right.
And he's starting to confide in Malcolm, who's kind of building this relationship with him. So then later we see Lynn doing laundry. She notices light flashing near Cole in different photographs. And she's like, oh, that's weird. Mm-hmm. Then later Cole and Malcolm are chatting. There's like a lot of different scenes where she's doing housework. He's talking to Malcolm. And they're chatting, and he's talking about, you know, stuff that he's done to upset his mom and how he's, you know, his life at school and all that stuff. Lynn finds just red words and pen scrawled all over the paper, but they seem very like adult.
Yeah.
And it's like killing, and it's very kind of disturbing words. And she's like, oh, that's, you know, concerning. Like, if I found that in my son's room, I'd be like, what the heck is this?
Absolutely. First thing you would do, call a child psychologist.
Something's happening to my child. I don't know what's going on. So then Cole tells Malcolm he doesn't want to be, I don't want to be scared anymore. And as Malcolm is later working in the basement, he hears someone's at the door, a man, and he tells his wife, you know, he wanted to go out. He's going to go see the Amish and go to the farmer's market. He's like, I think maybe you can, you know, get out for a little bit, as Malcolm's kind of listening into the conversation. And,
yeah, he's like eavesdropping a little bit.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you know, thanks for thinking of me, but no thanks, I'm fine. And Malcolm's pleased that she told him to go away. So they're very like, they're living in the same house, but not really
connecting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then, meanwhile, Cole's in school. He gets into an argument with the teacher, and Cole says, because the teacher said, what did this school used to be before it became a school? Mm-hmm. And Cole raises his hand and he said, it's a place where people used to be hung. And he's like, no, actually, it was a courthouse. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, there's lawyers and other things. He's like, well, the lawyers were the ones who hung the people. And he's like, you don't know what you're talking about, basically. And Cole's like, well,
I think you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He calls him the stuttering Stanley. And he's like, how did you know that? And then the teacher just gets so upset and slams his fist into Cole's desk and calls him a freak.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his life's not great.
Yeah.
Poor Cole. So Malcolm shows up later at the school. He's like, I just don't want to talk right now. So then Malcolm does a little bit of silly magic for Cole. You know, trying to make him laugh and make a joke. Mm-hmm. It's funny because my autocorrect said make a jerk.
So. Oh, yeah.
Make a joke. So Malcolm later returns home to find the VCR playing their wedding video. He notices that Anna was taking antidepressants. He goes to kind of see what she's doing. She's taking a shower. So then he leaves her alone and goes and tries to go to retreat to the basement, but the door is locked. He can't get the door open.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever this is, it's like a really nice house, and Cole is at a birthday party, and he's there, and his mom, Lynn, is there too, and she comments, you know, Cole's not really invited to parties that much, so, you know, thank you for including him.
Mm-hmm.
So Cole starts walking away from the party, listening to a man's voice coming from kind of a weird little closet.
Yeah, there was like this like spiral staircase, like kind of up into a cupola.
Yeah, and it's a very gorgeous, very old,
like
historical home.
Yeah, because is this in Philadelphia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a weird little closet. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is.
It's a cubby hole.
Yeah, it's a little door. And there's a man's voice coming from it saying, like, I didn't mean to steal this, you know, it's the horse or something. It's really strange. Mm-hmm. It doesn't belong in a children's party.
Or in a tiny closet up at the top of a spiral staircase.
Yes. And so the kid who is a kind of always bullying him. They go upstairs and one of the birthday boy is like, oh, my dad made me invite him. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, really? So then they approach Cole and they're like, and he's like, oh, happy birthday to the birthday boy. Mm-hmm. And in response, they shove him. They're like, do you want to go into that closet? And he's like, no, thanks. I'm fine. I'm good. And they shove him in there. Mm-hmm. And Lynn is kind of walking around and she starts hearing kind of shouting and people like looking at the stairs, on the stairs, looking up like mm-hmm. something's going on. So she runs upstairs. She can hear Cole screaming in the closet. Like she's trying to open it. It's not opening. And she's kind of doesn't know what to do. Eventually the door just kind of comes open.
Yeah.
And Cole screams and he faints into her arms. At the hospital, the doctor says, who's played by M. Night Shyamalan, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, he has concerns about cuts and bruises on his body. Mm-hmm. She gets pretty upset. She's like, do you think I hurt my child?
Yeah.
You know, I just want to know what's going on with him. And he's like, well, I can't say really, you know, but you need to talk to the social worker, mm-hmm. basically. So she's pretty not okay. And Malcolm is there sitting next to her, too. So he goes into Cole's hospital room. Cole's just like this tiny little mm-hmm. boy with yeah. this big pink blanket on him. And Cole tells Malcolm that he knows, you know, I know you're sad because I can see it in your eyes. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm tells Cole, he's like, they're kind of confiding in each other at this yeah. point. Enough of the bullshit, kind of. Mm-hmm. He tells Cole, he's like, you remind me of another patient, someone I couldn't help.
Yeah.
And so then Cole tells Malcolm his very, very big secret. And it's one of the biggest, most impactful scenes in cinema, basically. Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the top 100 film quotes of all time by the AFI.
And he's like, I see dead people. They just walk around like regular people. And Malcolm's like, well, how often? And he's like, all of the time.
Yeah. He's all like, they don't know they're dead.
And they don't know they're dead. And he sees them all the time. So Malcolm, of course, is like, I think he's schizophrenia, early childhood schizophrenia, and I don't think I can help Cole.
Yeah.
And he's talking to his little recorder. So then Lynn returns home with Cole. She finds his sweater is ripped, and there's scratches and bruises all over him. Mm-hmm. And so she calls the parents of the kids who bullied him, and is like, I want to talk to you about keeping your goddamn hands off my
your
child.
GD hands off my kid.
I know. And you know, rightly so, if you see that how that transpired, you yeah. would assume. So Cole is later awake in the night. He has to go to the bathroom. He runs to go to the toilet and we see the thermostat dip. And Cole can see his breath. He's a tiny little boy in his little t-shirt and little tiny whiteies. And he just looks just like so vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's crazy. He goes to the kitchen to see an entity, and he goes, Mommy, and it's a woman who turns around, and she yells at him for being a terrible husband, but she said, you know, you can't hurt me anymore, and she has slit her wrists, and it's obvious she took her own life. Mm-hmm. He runs to go into his tent, and he waits for the rest of the night. Later, Malcolm attends Cole's play, and the two of them chat about the play. Cole tells, he tells Cole he wants to talk more about what he told Malcolm at the hospital. Cole stops right in his tracks and he looks over and they're in his historical school and he sees people hanging up in the, you know, from nooses, down the hallway yeah. and in nooses. And he goes, do you never have that feeling where your hair stands up and your arms get all prickly with like goosebumps? And Malcolm's like, yeah. And he's like, that's them. Mm-hmm. Those are the ghosts or whatever, the dead people. So then later at dinner, Lynn tells Cole they're sitting there, just the two of them at the little kitchenette in the kitchen eating. And she tells Cole, you know, I found my mom's pendant in your drawer. How did mm-hmm. it, you know, I want to know kind of how it got there. And she doesn't like that Cole's lying to her about the pendant being moved. She tells Cole that they have to talk to each other or they're not going to make it. She's like, I don't know if you noticed, but our little family's not doing so good.
Yeah.
You know. So she asks if he took the pendant again. He says no. And she gets really upset. She's like, you ate enough dinner. You need to go to bed. Mm-hmm. He returns to his room to see that his little dog, his little puppy, wolf-looking thing. Yeah. He's so cute. He's running away, whimpering. Mm-hmm. And then you see a teen boy who is dressed kind of in like 70s clothes. Mm-hmm. He walks by and he's like, come on, I'll show you my dad's gun. And you see the back of his head and it's blown off. And
oh, it's God, like, that's so, because like you're so seeing jarring. Him from the front and you're like, okay, this uh-huh. kid from the side, let me show you my dad's gun. And then he turns to walk away and that you see that yeah. the whole back of his head missing. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's like after Cole made that admission, now we as a viewer start seeing what he's seeing all the time.
Yeah.
Which is so scary and terrifying. Mm-hmm. And then you understand why he acts the way he does. Just like, you know, anxious.
Yeah. Like the earlier scene with all of like the cupboard doors and everything open, like his mom left the room for a moment and then some corpse came in and did all that shit while he was sitting there. Like mm-hmm. you were like, oh, that's what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. So then later we see Anna selling a ring to a couple. She gives her employee a nice antique book, like happy birthday. And the two of them are kind of starting to connect and hug. Mm-hmm. And they look like they're about to maybe kiss. But then suddenly that moment is interrupted by the door, the glass in the door being cracked. And mm-hmm. you see a Malcolm pretty upset stalking off down the street. Mm-hmm. So he's already having marital problems. We as the viewer think that. And then we see them connecting and he's witnessed that and very upset. So he's not doing great either. Malcolm tells Cole, he's like, I can't be your doctor anymore because of the state of his marriage. He's yeah. like, I have to, you know, kind of focus on what's going on with my own relationship. And Cole starts crying and he tells Malcolm, you know, he needs, you know, you have to believe me to help me. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm makes a connection that Cole and his former patient, finally he makes a connection that they both saw dead people after he listens to an old recording of himself talking to his old patient.
Right.
When he was a child. And he turns the volume really, really up. And this revelation's amazing. And he realizes that they're telling the truth mm-hmm. because he hears the entity saying like, you know, what happened to me? Mm-hmm. Or I can't remember what he said, but he's speaking Spanish to the young boy that from the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. So Malcolm goes to talk to Cole. He asks Cole what he thinks the ghosts want when they talk to him. Cole says, you know, I think they just want help and that listening to them will maybe make them go away. So they're mm-hmm. going to try that. And Cole's like, what if it doesn't work? He's like, well, what do you have to lose? Sort of.
Yeah.
So then later that evening, Cole sees Anna's coworker leaving their house. He doesn't really notice Malcolm, and Malcolm is pretty upset. Mm-hmm. Cole wakes up later that night and hears his mother crying in her sleep. He returns to his tent, and the room is very, very cold. After she's kind of settled down, he's like, okay, I can go back to my own room. And his room is quite frosty. He goes to his tent, and he discovers a ghost girl who's vomiting. And he runs away to get away from her. But then he kind of realizes what they're going to try to do. And he goes to talk to her.
Yeah.
He asks her, you know, if she wants to tell him something. Mm-hmm. And then the following day, Cole goes with Malcolm onto the bus to a wake. And it's the wake of that young girl. Mm-hmm. And it's the same girl who had something to say. She was vomiting and she stops. And that night, like going back to that scene, she's like, I'm feeling better now. Mm-hmm. So there's something she has to communicate with him. So guests are talking about the younger sister who's now getting ill. We are hearing them. That's happening. Mm-hmm. Cole, he enters her room where he discovers the little girl's name is Kira, a box. Mm-hmm. So Kira is under the bed with a box and he hands it to Cole. Inside is a video and he goes and up to a guy who's sitting looking very, very upset and deep grieving sitting on the couch. And he says, are you Kira's dad? She asked me to give thee this. Mm-hmm. So he goes to play the video. It's a recording of Kira playing with her little puppets and she's videoing herself and her mother starts to enter the room. So she jumps back into bed and pretends that she was not doing that. Mm-hmm. Her mother approaches with a tray with soup and some milk and Kira does not see this, but it's captured by the video camera of her mother pouring some house cleaner into Kira's soup. Mm-hmm. And Kira's like, I'm feeling a lot better. Do you think I can maybe do something? I can't go to the park or I can't remember what she says. But her mother says, no, you always get sick after lunch. So it's one of those things where you're like, oh, my gosh, you're a Munchausen by proxy monster
yeah.
woman. She mixes up the soup and she feeds it to Kira. You know, and everyone in the at the wake has kind of
is like watched it.
Yeah.
Like he just put that tape on with like, you know, dozens people of people in the house.
What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now her father knows. Her mother's standing there, and I think she's wearing red. Wasn't she wearing red? She wasn't wearing black. I think
so, yeah.
Everyone else, which I think is also interesting, too.
All these mourners are wearing. Throughout the movie, it's deliberate, the items in the movie that are red. Like the doorknob to the basement and...
Yes, yeah. Yes. But I'm just saying it's like everyone else at the wake is... Everyone's wearing their...
Yeah, you're like, morning. Why would the mother of the dead girl be wearing red?
Yeah, her nice, fresh red blazer. Anyway... Yeah. Her father knows, and he's like, you know, you were keeping Kira sick.
Mm-hmm.
And later we see Cole sitting next to the little sister, and she's like, is Kira going to come back? And he says, no, but you're going to be okay now.
Yeah.
Basically, like, Kira's intent was to protect her little sister.
Right, because clearly her mom had started doing it to the sister, too.
Exactly. So then sometime later, Cole is the star of a play. And the mean kid is the village idiot, which I loved. He's like, quiet, village idiot. Malcolm is there. He's really proud of him. And the two of them are chatting. And it seems to be the end of their time as patient and doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He tells Malcolm, you know, he's like, you know, why don't you talk to her while she's asleep? She can hear you, you know, if you are having trouble communicating.
Yeah.
Malcolm tells Cole to talk to someone very close, you know, closer to him, mm-hmm. you know, confide in him, this person, which is obviously Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
So later, I guess a few days later, they're sitting in traffic. Lynn and Cole are sitting in the car and they're waiting because there is a traffic, you know, a really serious accident.
Mm-hmm.
He talks to Lynn and he says, you know, I'm ready to communicate with you now.
Yeah.
And he says the accident up ahead killed a woman and she's standing right here. Yeah. And you see her. She's a bicyclist and she's standing at the window. Lynn tells him, she goes, why are you saying this? You know, you're scaring me.
Yeah.
And he admits that, you know, I'm scared too sometimes. And I also see ghosts. And he's like, what do you think about this? You know, and
so,
she's like,
yeah, he's so unsure, he's like so nervous worried. About how she's going to react. Like, mm-hmm. is she going to think he's crazy? Is she going to not believe him?
Yeah. And she's like, I will never think that about you.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, God is back forever.
Yeah. I love it. Did she keep, saying, look at my face.
Look at my face.
Look at my face. Look at my face. She's like, I'm not mad. She does that like 3 or 4 times throughout the movie. That's what she said.
And you're like, oh.
Look at my face. I'm not mad.
I'm not mad. So he tells her also, Grandma says hi. And she's like, how could you say that? And he goes, you know, and also she's sorry for taking the bumblebee pendant, but she likes it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts to tell her things only her mother would know.
Yeah.
Like, after that fight, she went to go see you dance. Remember, you thought she didn't come, but she did. And she stayed in the shadows so you can see her. But she thought you looked, you know, beautiful. Like, I can't remember what. Mm-hmm. But it was something that only she would know, this interaction. Right.
There's no way Cole would have known that if he wasn't actually talking.
Being even born.
Yeah.
Basically. And he goes, he also tells her grandma's answer to her question. And she said, every day. And he's like, well, what was the question? And she says very tearfully, you know, do I make you proud?
Yeah.
And it's a very like loving, heartfelt moment. The mm-hmm. two of them embrace and it's, you know, very impactful. And so you feel like Cole's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But then later, Malcolm is talking to Anna in her sleep and, she kind of replies, why did you leave me? And his wedding ring falls to the floor and he, I think she's holding it.
Yeah. She like rolls over something and drops it.
Yeah. And drops onto the floor. And then there's that huge, big, big revelation that he died
mm-hmm.
in the, first scene where he was shot. And his wife is, in fact, not a mad, angry wife, but mm-hmm. in deep, deep mourning and grieving.
Yeah.
Because he died and he was shot by his former patient. And, you know, he tells her as she's sleeping, she was never second, you know, to his work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he loves her and he's ready to go now. And he just had to help someone.
Yeah.
And that was the film Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yes. Landmark.
Landmark movie.
Mm-hmm.
So did you think it was scary?
Yeah, I definitely found this scary the first time that I saw it. The scenes where they presented the ghost, particularly, I remember the creepiest one to me was actually the girl in the tent.
Yeah, little Kira, because she's quite... Yeah. Oh my gosh, what's going on?
It's so startling, and she, you know, like the vomiting and everything, it was just like very upsetting. I remember that scene being really creepy. And I think that, you know, all of those moments where Cole's encountering the dead people, they set those scenes very it's almost like very classic. Like a classic scary setting of like the way that you use the space and the silence and lighting and everything, where or like, just like Cole getting out of bed in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, like mm-hmm. those kinds of things. Like you could call them cliche, but they don't feel like it in this. They just feel like a perfectly built suspenseful moment to then reveal something terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, there's a couple of startling moments. I wouldn't say that they were necessarily jump scares, but certainly wasn't relying on that type of thing to scare the viewer. You know, it was the prolonged like building of the story, and using those like tense moments and those scary moments for Cole. Rewatching. So, and then it's obviously because of this huge twist ending, which then of course became what M. Night Shyamalan was known for. It was like, oh, it's him. It's going to be a twist ending. Mm-hmm. But because this was the first one, it was just like everybody's minds were just totally blown and you wanted to like immediately go back and watch it again so right. that you can look at all of those scenes with that piece of information and start to realize like that first scene when Malcolm comes to the house and he's sitting in the living room like across from Lynn and you just assume that they've both been sitting there together waiting for Cole. But yeah. you realize like she never talks to him, she never looks at him, she never says or does anything to indicate that he's there. Mm-hmm. And it's just the dialogue is written very specifically and very carefully that to feed into our assumption that he's mm-hmm. alive and to support yeah. it without actually giving evidence of anybody else interacting with him other than Cole. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why it was a successful twist ending, was because of how carefully it was written to support that. You know, that
orchestrated perfect. Yeah, so exactly. Well. Yeah.
I think Haley Joel Osment was perfect. He was so adorable. And like you said, like physically very vulnerable looking because he was so slight, so tiny, like the big head and the big eyes. And, but also a very like empathetic manner, like clearly like a highly intelligent young child.
It's soft spoken.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you really got all like all of those different feelings like from him that he's sad and he's lonely and he's burdened and but he's not angry. He's not selfish. Like he's just like a very sweet child that's like stuck in this situation.
Yeah.
Which is I did not realize until today that this was so widely Oscar nominated. Like it didn't win any, mm-hmm. but it was nominated for Best Picture. Haley Joel Osment was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Mm-hmm. Toni Collette was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Mm-hmm. And then it was Best Original Screenplay, Best Director. And then there was one more that I don't remember if it was film editing or something like that. But it was nominated for 6 Oscars, which, you know, while you would probably categorize it as a horror film more than a suspense just because of like the visuals and the actual inclusion of like dead people with their ghosts. Heads blown off and stuff.
Yes.
But it's not... I think that why it impressed everybody so much is because it kind of felt like when Hereditary first came out, mm-hmm. like it felt new and fresh and inventive and intelligent, mm-hmm. And not kind of just another one of like the same types of scary movies we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Would you say it was like the beginning of elevated horror?
You could say, I think that that would be fair because it really was the creation of a story through the vehicle of a really well-written script. And then, you know, that happened to align with some talented actors and actresses, mm-hmm. Where it was like the perfect storm of everything coming together.
Yeah. I mean, Bruce Willis was so good.
Yeah, he's which really, is, you know, like he, he's actually had a pretty varied career in terms of the genres that he has played in. But obviously, he's most well known as an action star because that's how he started his career.
Yeah.
And those are most of his most memorable roles are from action movies. Like Die Hard has been, you know, my favorite movie my whole life. Like it's, I actually watched it while I was in labor with Tommy. and so, you know, like I adore Bruce Willis, but I would never have been like, put him on a list of like really gifted actors, but he is definitely has some depth that he didn't always feel like he needed to put into like the next Expendables sequel, you know, but in this one, you see a lot of that come out of what he's actually capable of. So did you think it was scary?
I saw it in the theater when I was how old? And it came out in 99. So I was maybe 16, 15, 16. I thought it was scary. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the mother who he's like mommy and it's a woman who's like yelling at him. And just like very angry. And then the scene in the tent. And, you know, and the little boy would be like, let me show you where my dad's gun is. And you're like, ah, get away from me. And it's like you said, where it's not like jump scares, but it's like suddenly the camera's panning and suddenly you see someone's there.
Yeah, it's just revealed.
It's not like I'm going to get you. It's like, oh, here's they're there. There you go. And it's kind of terrifying. And, and, you know, what are you going to do? So I thought it was so... Yeah, very scary. And now I'm like, oh, I find it, I appreciate it.
Right.
You know, once the reveals have all happened and stuff. But then you also notice, like, when you go back and watch it again, even though I've seen it a handful of times, I wouldn't say I watch it every year or anything. But I do notice things I didn't notice before. So I think that's always interesting with a kind of a psychological horror film. So that's always fun. But I do have to say that it was really fun watching it with Charlotte and that revelation where where like he's in the hospital. He's like, she's wondering what's wrong with this kid.
Yeah.
What's going on? And he goes, I see dead people. And she's like, wait, what?
Come again.
and then you start to see what he sees. And then there's later the revelation where, and Charlotte's kind of saying his wife is, you know, they seem like they're going to get a divorce or like what's going on. She seems really, you know, mad.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that he died.
Yeah.
And that's like so heartbreaking.
Yes.
You know, and, it was just amazing to see that. So as Charlotte's starting to enjoy and appreciate a lot of the stuff I always really loved myself, it's kind of revisiting it and experiencing it again new.
Well, and that's why there are some movies where you have to be so careful about the first time that you watch it because you can't get it back. You know, we were talking about last time about your spoiler alert sweatshirt.
I'm wearing it now.
So
on the back, the child's therapist is a ghost.
The back. And, you know, it's the same thing with something like Usual Suspects or, you know, like any of those films or and like the front of your sweatshirt that says Rosebud, even Citizen Kane.
Kaiser Soze.
Yeah. any of those movies that were legendary for their twist endings, like you only get one shot. At maximizing your appreciation of that surprise ending. And because I will never forget trying to show my mom The Usual Suspects for the first time. And she kept on like getting up to like go put the laundry in the dryer, getting up to blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, do you want me to pause it? And she'd be like, no, it's fine. And I was like, Jesus Christ, mom, like you're going to blow it. This is your one shot to like watch this movie and then get to the end and then be like, what? And you're not even going to know why it's so shocking. Because you haven't been paying attention.
I think that, well, I have the same problem too, where you're trying to make it the perfect scenario for watching a film. You know, don't watch it during the day. Don't walk around doing other stuff. Don't be on your phone. You know, because that really sets the mood. If someone's like, it wasn't even scary. You're like, well because
you didn't give it a chance
You weren't coming to the situation with a kind of trying to appreciate it. Or take it all in or even see all of the hard work and the all the stuff and dedication that went into this.
Yeah.
Not to say like you have to be a snob about it, but just, you know, really get into the moment.
Yeah. And it's not, you don't have to be that way with every single movie, you know,
not
because any movie you have a chance to go back and appreciate it more the second time around. But some of these with these endings, like you can't get that back once you know that piece of information.
Yeah.
And that's like you say exactly what I was thinking, like, you know, all of the effort and work and intention that, you know, he put into this screenplay and this story, like it's like kind of disrespectful to be like, ah, whatever. Oh, he's a ghost too. Okay. You know, mm-hmm. because you didn't get invested in the story. You weren't actually watching the scenes and watching the interactions and setting yourself up to be amazed by that revelation.
Yeah.
Because you were just kind of like giving it half whatever. Your attention. And
well,
that's,
I think also part of it's like, well, everyone's saying so much about it. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to give it a chance because everyone's building mm-hmm. it up so much. So you have to be like flippant about it. And yeah. Like, no, or like, no,
I totally, it wasn't that great.
It's whatever.
I
mean, like, you don't have to be so flip. You don't have to be too cool. Come mm-hmm. on. Just
come
like,
on.
Come on.
Just give it a chance.
Give it a chance.
But that goes to like, you know, this was, you know, we're going to, spoiler alert, the next few episodes are going to be dedicated to some of M. Night Shyamalan's other films that we've enjoyed. And but of course, we had to start with this one because it, you know, launched his career. And as I mentioned earlier, like kind of created this blasé attitude about his twist endings or whatever.
Yeah.
Not every one of them has one, but a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. And so you're just kind of like you're waiting for it or you're expecting it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't take anything away from how deliberate and intentional he is when setting up these stories, building and building and building to this kind of incredible revelation at the end.
Yeah.
So even though you might start to be just kind of like, oh, another twist ending from M. Night Shyamalan, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
But it's still, he has a talent for it. He has a real gift for not just thinking of the stories and what that shocking revelation would be, mm-hmm. but then telling the stories in a way to maximize your reaction mm-hmm. to the revelation at the end.
Yes. And you have to have some buy-in and you have to be patient mm-hmm. and you have
absolutely.
To maybe take note of subtle things that you may have, if you miss and walk around and you're texting or you're doing other things, you'll miss it. And mm-hmm. maybe, you know, turn on something else if you feel like,
you know, pick another time,
you know, when you can really dedicate and have some buy-in and, mm-hmm. and actually process and watch it. And not to say it's like it's a master storyteller and you're gonna be so regretful. It's just, you know,
yeah, because some of his movies are duty, like,
yeah, you know,
they're not all winners.
They can't all be, you know, right out of the park amazing. Yeah. And but this definitely was.
Yes.
And so I loved that we cuddled up and we had our blankets, we were eating some snacks, we were mm-hmm. watching the movie, and I had the lights off and we're just watching it together. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, get off your phone. And she's like, okay.
Sorry.
I'm like, no, you want to see this.
Mm-hmm.
So she appreciated it a lot. And then we also watched our next movie, is The Visit.
The Visit.
She liked that one in a different way.
Mm-hmm. It's a very different setting. And
she thought that The Visit was very scary.
Yeah, so did Grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, they're just different films. Mm-hmm. They're a different animal altogether, written by the same guy. But this is more cinematic masterpiece.
Yeah.
And The Visit's not.
Well, yeah, you know? And there's a bunch of, that's what, like, even though, you know, because of this twist ending rep that he has, you might be like, oh, all his movies are the same. But they're really all very dramatically different in their content, like the topics that he tells his stories about.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one is like a it's almost like a classic ghost story. And then he adds this twist that your main character is the ghost. But other than that, it's a ghost story.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get, and it's filmed in a very kind of classic cinematic approach, mm-hmm. where then The Visit is like found footage.
Yeah.
Very different. Not like it is found footage. It tells, you know, the main character. This one, I mean, main character was Bruce Willis, but Haley Joel Osment was an equal
on-screen character. Too,
exactly. Sure. On-screen time is balanced, you know, importance and relevance to the story. You might say that Cole's character is even more important to the story.
Yes. Yeah.
But in The Visit, you know, you have main characters that are like they're young teens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the setting is completely different. And, you know, rather that you have some, even the difference of like Sixth Sense contains like quite a few background characters and side characters and extras and scenes with different people. Whereas The Visit is like, there's just a couple of people in that movie,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And so there's so many things about it that make the two feel very different, even though they both qualify as his movies that have that big twist ending. Mm-hmm. And so then that would be my admonition of anybody that hasn't seen The Visit and is going to watch The Visit ahead of our next episode. Make sure you pay attention to it, just like we were talking about with Sixth Sense. Like, actually give it your full attention your first time out, because once you know the secret or mm-hmm. the surprise from the end, then you would never enjoy it in the same way again. You would still enjoy it again and, uh-huh. and see it in a different way, but you can't get that first time back.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, let me quickly go back to The Sixth Sense, mm-hmm. Because I hadn't watched it maybe and since the kid, my kids were little.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So I watched it again, obviously a few days ago with Charlotte. And the little subtle things that made me assume that his mother knew he was there, that Malcolm was there.
Oh, okay, yes.
Was I think, I forgot, but I kind of wanted to mention it when I was giving my summary, but mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, forgot. was when she is, when they're sitting in the hospital together,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, you know, you think that he's a doctor that's an
like,
or
maybe she
care.
Even called him and is right. like, he's in the hospital. And so he came. Yes. Like, those are the assumptions you yes. make.
And then when they're sitting across from each other, you assume as a viewer, they just stop talking because Cole came in.
Right.
And then when she goes to talk to him and he's like, she says, you have an hour.
Yeah.
You think that their hour of having their appointment or whatever right. their interaction
has to be. So you think that
be.
She's talking to Malcolm.
Yeah, kind of. You have an hour. Kind of. She says over her shoulder a little bit, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize later that she was just talking to Cole.
Right.
So I think when you go back and watch this stuff after you've seen it, even if you know the twist, it's really kind of fun to see those tiny, mm-hmm. they're little, very subtle Easter eggs, if you, I guess, or not,
yeah.
but that kind of help yeah. you keep the story going and realize little bit by bit that no one sees him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that's why that, you know, I'm sure that had something to do with why he got a screenplay nomination for this, because, you know, he could have had her say any number of things,
mm-hmm.
but he intentionally, very carefully selected a phrase that, in with Malcolm being dead, made sense for her to say to Cole, but knowing, like, having her deliver it that way and use those exact words, knowing the viewer would think that she was talking either Malcolm or talking to both of them about the length of their session.
Yes.
Like, even just that duration of time, saying 1 hour, because that's, you know, immediately triggers, like, oh, that's how long a therapy session is an hour.
Uh-huh. Right.
'Cause it could have been 30 minutes, or you have 15 minutes, or you have whatever, but she mm-hmm. said an hour. And so that plays on people's, you know, background knowledge to be like, okay, so she's talking yeah. to the therapist
taking
because
your,
they're
yeah. yeah taking your leap. And I think that he as a writer has us as viewers do that a lot, so mm-hmm. even if you've already seen this movie, it's always fun to go back. That's my
yeah.
point and
yeah.
and notice these things that I maybe didn't notice before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fun, and you know, to share that with my child later, be like, did you notice this? And mm-hmm. she's like, oh, you're right. And it's kind of fun. So
yeah.
But I'm excited to talk about The Visit next time, and mm-hmm. you're doing the recap.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm not
I mean,
sure
we're just
what
gonna,
order, but we're going to
yeah,
churn
we've got
out.
Some plans. We're going to steamroll through, you know, try and touch on as many as we can that we like.
Because mm-hmm. there are some I was like, nah, not
yeah,
doing that
no.
one.
I'm like, all right, that's fine.
I don't want to do that one. But I'm pretty sure... We'll do the Unbreakable ones.
Yeah, we'll do the Unbreakable series. I really love The Happening. We both, you know, like The Village quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's the new one, the most recent, not most recent, but a recent one called Knock at the Cabin that we've actually never seen.
Yeah.
But we're going to try and give that a watch and talk about that a little bit. I mean, he's very prolific. Like, we were both a fan of the show The Servant that he mm-hmm. made for, was that Hulu?
Apple.
Apple
Plus. And
That was really, really well done and scary and interesting.
I love the actors in that
yes.
show as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are into his movies mm-hmm. and you're like, you know, If you have Apple, give it a watch.
Yeah, because it's a nice little binge series.
It's good. Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange, and it has...
Nell Tiger Free.
Yes. Her, mm-hmm. I love that actress. And oh, and also Rupert Grint? Grint.
Yeah, who's from Harry Potter.
Yeah. Ron from Harry Potter. But he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's so great.
And then the actress, Laura Ambrose, she plays, she was Claire from 6 Feet Under, that show.
Yeah,
Six Feet Under.
I never watched 6 Feet Under, but she was one of the stars of Can't Hardly Wait, which I freaking loved that movie in high school. So yeah, Lauren Ambrose is great too. And then there's also that movie that's coming out soon, The Watchers, that he's actually, I think, just a producer on because his daughter is directing it.
Oh, I saw
that one with Dakota Fanning as the lead.
I saw the trailer a few days ago.
Yeah.
That looks really good too.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so much out there that he's, you know, written or directed or produced. He's definitely become a very influential guy.
Yeah. And I think that's
scary stuff.
I think to like shrug off his, you know, his impact is be like, it's whatever, M. Night Shyamalan, whatever. You know, I think that is kind of a disservice, you know, even if you're not a huge fan, it's like, it's nice to recognize all of the talent and all that stuff that went into these films. So I'm excited to talk about it.
But. Yeah, me too.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Talk to you next time.
Bye.